This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Joining us for this really, I think it's really important topic. Talent doesn't exist. Genius is born. It's not born, it's made. We're just going to go live on my YouTube channel as well.
We're live.
Yeah. Okay. So, assalamu alaikum, everyone. This is not a particularly Islamic topic per se. It's part of the series, The Deep Think, that we're also running on Clubhouse. It's just some topics that I think of use are very important to everybody. Whether you're a Muslim or not a Muslim, it actually doesn't matter, because these topics are things that are of big interest to all of us. And the consequences, I think, of the subject matter that we are discussing is very, very far reaching. It's really interesting that I was popping into a room earlier today with one of our moderators, Atiq Mogul, and they were having a similar discussion. we got the vibe that this was some racial supremacist quasi. I don't know what it did not sound healthy. And they were pushing the notion, quite the opposite, that everything is in your genes. It's your programmed, you know, your intelligence is what it is when you're born, and there's literally nothing you can do to change it. And it's just, I think the first thing is the evidence is so strongly stacked against this particular position. And it's also evidently, I think, quite dangerous. It's not healthy for us as human beings to think like that, to believe that. This whole nature-nurture argument is, even from a scientific point of view, a massive simplification. As I read in a book very recently, it gave an analogy that it's a bit like saying cookies are made of flour, sugar, and eggs. And it's just so broad, it's just not helpful. When you actually break it down from a perspective of looking at it from an evolutionary perspective, and I think that actually there's not necessarily a contradiction here, whether you believe in evolution or whether you believe there's a creator. I actually think in many ways, the results are the same in terms of how we think about how the human beings work. It doesn't seem to matter to me, right? And that's perhaps a deeper topic of conversation, right? But from the evolutionary perspective, think about it this way. If you are claiming that genius, that talent is a pure product of these two things, right? Of your genetics and your environment, nature and nurture, if that's what you believe. Basically, what you are saying is that you have literally been programmed, or evolution has programmed someone to be Beethoven, Einstein, whatever genius you can think of, Serena Williams, whatever genius you can think of, whether it's a sporting genius, whether it's an intellectual genius, whether it's a musical genius, whether you're a Leonardo da Vinci, right? Whether you are some Ibn Qayyum, some poetic genius, some Homer, whoever, whatever, right? Some philosophical genius, you've been programmed by evolution just to pop into existence. Right. And that how would this work from a purely evolutionary perspective? Because that would mean that that would mean, what's the point in, for example, Einstein popping into existence in, 150 BC? It would be of absolutely no use. He has to pop it. You've got these, therefore you'd have these geniuses, because you're claiming that DNA has literally programmed these people to pop into existence with all their genius intact. But it only makes any sense for them to exist within the particular framework in a particular time. And it goes against the whole idea of the efficiency, because, evolution is supposed to be extremely efficient, right? It makes no sense, right? What does make sense, however, is that that rather we have a process, we have a system that allows our brains to adapt to our environment when that system is activated and implemented. And so that basically, it's not to deny the role of you know, of our DNA or a sort of our created nature, we could say. It's what we do with it. And that's the thing, is that so therefore within every human being is this potential. This potential exists within us. We just need to activate it. And this is really what is being shown through the study of the human mind, through understanding how the human brain works. This is what we're discovering, is that really within nearly every single human being, apart from some basic fundamental, you know, there are, of course, genetics is gonna, you know, the way you are, your particular body size, your particular, it's gonna play a part in some things. And the example I love to give, for example, the example I love to give is that if you are, obviously, if you're 7 foot tall, you're going to have some advantage in the basketball court over someone who's 3 foot tall. So there are some, you know, basic, you know, genetic markers that are going to give you some advantages in some situations, right? But apart from these very, very few basic things, and there may be some geographical, you know, components in terms of diet. And another example that one could give is, for example, if you live in the part of the world where, you know, you need to walk or run to school 20 miles every day, there and back. Well, guess what? It's probably going to help you quite a little bit to be a good marathon runner, right? So, yes, for sure, there are going to be particular circumstances that are going to favor a person developing particular skills, particular skill base, right? But as this beautiful phrase, there's this beautiful phrase, myelin doesn't care who you are. It just cares what you do. And what is myelin, right? Myelin is basically an insulator that forms on your synapses. And the stronger this insulator is over a particular synapse, the faster a signal is transmitted through your brain. And that's basically all skills are. Skills are a series of connections in your brain. And these skills develop through hard work. When you work hard at something, right? And this is where all of us, whether we're religious or spiritual, religious or not, there's a crossover. This is where the connection between everything happens, right? Is that especially I would say within the but this is true in any religion, but within the Islamic paradigm, the whole idea of struggle, of life being a struggle, of life being a test, of the process through which we improve ourselves and develop ourselves and grow ourselves both individually and collectively as human beings, is through the process of struggle, right? This process of struggle is exactly what causes our, you know, these pathways to form. And the more we develop skills in a particular area, the more this myelin, which is a type of fatty substance that insulates our synapses, the stronger they form, the quicker the signals, and therefore the better we are at developing those skills. And it doesn't matter what you apply it to. It could be tennis, it could be golf, it could be driving a car, it could be figuring out the theory of relativity. It could be any, or, you know, playing an instrument, or it could be spiritual things as well, by the way. It could be anything to do with religious practice, meditation, prayer, studying religious texts. It doesn't matter. The basic process, what is going on in the brain, is exactly the same. So theoretically, you know, someone like, let's say Serena Williams, although like, so it's interesting, right? So you took at this whole, look at this whole argument of nature versus nurture, but you have these individuals, these, and there's, the list is almost endless, really. And the evidence is really overwhelming that you can take someone who traditionally, and, you know, I remember, and I'm, you know, I'm quite open about the sort of pretty racist background that I, you know, came from. And we had this discussion last week about imperial race theory, right? And we had this discussion about, oh, well, why are there literally, why are there no black racing drivers, for example? Well, obviously now we have Lewis Hamilton, who's probably the, one of the greatest who's ever lived, right? But we'd have this discussion because he wasn't around then. Why are there no, you know, black racing drivers? And there were people, I don't even know if I was one of them or these people were in my family, who would say, well, you know, black people are just not genetically disposed towards it. They don't have the genes for it. You know, they don't have the environment for it. And so on and so forth. But then you have someone like Lewis Hamilton, who's raised by his dad with this, you know, loving Formula One, having this dream of Formula One, and being trained in, you know, go-karts. So this is really interesting, because the real key, so he, you know, he goes through this training, he has this passion, he has this drive, and he trains in this incredibly intense way. So what is the really evidence so far? Is that actually geniuses are made, they are not born. And they are made through purpose, what is called purposeful practice, right? Purposeful practice. It's not just any old practice. It's a particular type of practice that, that is born out of constantly being confronted with your mistakes, challenging, being challenged to the very limits of your abilities. And through this purposeful practice, one develops this very, very finely tuned skill set in a particular area, right? And they, as they say, it takes something like 10,000 hours of purposeful practice, which is about 10 years, right? So, like, often the challenges to this are, okay, well, how about child prodigies, for example, these child geniuses, these savants, you know, these kids who are, you know, 6 years old, 10 years old. People often mention Mozart, for example, as an example. Well, I mean, Mozart is a good example because actually his early compositions, or the Bronte sisters, for example. So this is, this stuff has become legendary, but partly because it's just to do with cognitive bias, and it's not, they're not actually based on facts. We like it because it's dramatic. We like it because it plays into our biases and our prejudices, right? But they're not really based upon facts. Mozart, his dad was a music teacher. By the time he was 9 years old, he had already gone under. And it's the method of teaching, you have to understand, it's the method of teaching. It is possible for someone at the age of 10 to have gone through a huge amount of practice. He wasn't actually particularly gifted at that age. It's only later, but the foundations had been laid from a very, very young age. It's the same with the Bronte sisters. In fact, they also, if you look at their early literature that they composed, it was pretty terrible. But the fact was that they were practicing writing a lot from an extremely young age, right? So this idea, there are these myths perpetrated, but the reality is you find that usually, almost always, these kids, you know, have this intensive training taking place from a very young age. So, Bor, what's your feelings about all of this particular topic?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned genetic determinism for a while, a little while ago. And I was thinking about the fact that even the people who push this idea of genetic determinism don't really have a up-to-date view, because that's the sort of view that may have been held a few decades ago. Now, even the Darwinists are actually saying the environment creates a bigger role in terms of your development than does your genes. And we have this fascination of it's in the blood. We have this fascination that genes equal basically behavior. And that was the rise of the field of sociobiology back in the 70s. However, all of that stuff has actually been debunked pretty much now. by evolutionists who are now actually much more open to the idea that our behavior is impacted by not only, and this is very interesting, not only our environment, as in our training and so on and so forth, but also that, you know, the human mind has this amazing plastic ability, which we did not know before, right? We had this sort of very antiqued view about how we have fixed traits, when now we have the exact opposite. And I just wanted to highlight, you know, inshallah, in the coming months, we're going to be having a publication on evolution. And one of the academic editors of that, it's very interesting that he actually, his parents were illiterate, and he's from a village in Pakistan, and he's now actually got a PhD in evolutionary biology. So again, it's, you know, your parents being illiterate and that type of stuff, it's not some genetic predisposition that you're just tied to. You can break out of it. And there's many examples of that.
And I think this is really key. I mean, you know, the key thing is the implications of it. And the key thing is, the key thing is the implications. The fact that if you are ready to put in the time, you're ready to put in the effort, you put, because it is time, effort. It's not easy, right? So this substance in your brain, myelin, does not form through wishful thinking, you know, and floating around and lying on your bed and just chilling and dreaming, right? It forms when real hard work is taking place. So let's not be delusional about it, right? Talent is a product of extremely hard work. And I think one of the side effects of this idea of talent, oh, this person's talented, they're so talented, it actually has quite a lot of negative implications, right? And this is evidenced as well, that once a person begins to think that they are talented, they actually usually stop performing so well. And the reason is, it's to do with mindset. So this is a very important topic. And this is a very important topic for all of us. I think this is so important for us as human beings. And the topic of mindset, whether you have what is called a closed mindset or a growth mindset, it is very much linked to your ideas or your belief system about talent and genius. Because if you're believing that talent and genius is something that is, it's just in your DNA, you're either good at it or you're not, you know, either God, destiny, you know, your environment has brought you up in a certain way and you're going to be able to achieve these things or not, right? It gives you a particular outlook and a particular attitude about yourself and, in fact, everybody else in the world, right?
Yeah.
And especially if a person thinks that they are innately gifted, then what unfortunately happens to people like that is that when they are confronted with situations and environments in which they now really have to exercise a degree of real effort in order to be able to be productive or produce a particular result, this itself goes against their belief system, because they think that, no, if I'm a genius and if I'm naturally talented, then I shouldn't really have to try. I should be just able to do this without trying. And then in order to sort of justify this false belief system, these people will unfortunately end up doing all sorts of unpleasant things like lying, cheating, fixing the books, stealing, all sorts of things in order to be able to keep up this story they have about themselves. Because for challenge is uncomfortable. They haven't let themselves got used to the idea, whereas a person with a growth mindset, they accept challenges, they embrace them. Every challenge for them, every difficulty for them is embraced as a new learning experience. And so everything has this potential for them for growth and development, because in fact, that's exactly what is happening in their brain. Every time you are challenged, every time you are confronted with a difficulty, and if you embrace this struggle, which it really is the inner struggle, embrace this struggle, then you grow, you develop, you increase your skill set, you broaden your ability to deal and cope with all sorts of things, right? So you can see the difference, therefore, between these two types of approaches and these two types of belief systems. The impact is really, really far ranging. So it's not really here. We're just not talking about something that is hypothetical. It's something that is really, really important in how it impacts how you bring up your kids, right? How do you treat your kids? How do you speak to your kids? How do you educate your kids, right? And it's also important in terms of, I think the one factor that I think that is really important is the idea of humility as well, right? And I think this is where the also something that is very important is the acknowledgement. And there is a factor here that is something that most people would call, probably a lot of people who are obviously secular would call, luck, right? And but, you know, people who believe in God would think of it as destiny, or, you know, God's plan. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, you could train yourself to be the greatest, you know, runner, the fastest runner, the greatest sportsman, you know, a fantastic genius. And then something could happen to you. You could, you know, you could shatter your legs in a way that you could never recover, right? You could be in a car accident and your brain could be damaged. And this is nothing that you possibly in any reasonable way, shape, or form could have had control over. So one shouldn't imagine, therefore, the other thing is important is that even when it comes to hard work, we should always be careful not to simply attribute everything just to, yeah, I work so hard at this, although that is very important. It's interesting that I came across a statement of Michelangelo, who at a very young age produced some extraordinary piece of art, and the people at the time were calling him this little genius. He was only 20 years old or something, but in fact he had been working since he was the age of 6 in these guilds where he had been trained and tutored by masters, and again he was brought up in this extremely rich environment of purposeful practice. And he actually objected to it. He said, if you knew how hard I had to be working, you wouldn't say that. It may appear that I've just, you know, produced this genius, but it's not. It's a product of hard work. But also one has to acknowledge that it is really only from the blessings of God that God has allowed you ultimately to fulfill that talent, to fulfill that, not that talent, but that, you know, that all that hard work that you've put into it is still ultimately there's something out there that has allowed you, and of course we believe that that's the creator, right, that has allowed us to fulfill, you know, whatever whatever task we've put ourselves to. But I think from an Islamic perspective, generally, it's interesting, and I think maybe on Clubhouse some of our, you know, hosts can pick up on this, is that, you know, that Allah tells us in the Quran, the meaning of which is that, you know, whatever you strive for towards, that's what you're going to get. And this is a basic rule that, you know, what you make an effort towards is what you're going to get. And so if you make an effort towards belief and iman and faith and piety, that's what you'll get. And if you make, by the way, an effort in the opposite direction, God is going to facilitate that for you. That is the, you know, whatever path you are going to choose, your creator is facilitating that path for you. And that includes, you know, whatever it is that you want to do in your life. So this is, you know, this is a basic underlying premise that we have also, you know, in the Quran, and you know, that there is an understanding that is given to us there. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, from a secular, I mean, for anybody who's watching this, who's familiar with some of the secular ways that this principle is explained, they would call it the law of attraction. You know, that's what they would say. But we would say it's Qadr, like you said. And just to add to your point about how powerful this idea actually is, that talent isn't genetic, talent isn't something you're born with. I want to give a little sort of historical fact which a lot of people don't know, which is one of the brilliant scientists who was behind evolutionary theory in the 19th century was Alfred Russel Wallace, who initially, when him and Darwin, they actually came forward and published the theory, it was not known as Darwin's theory, it was known as Darwin and Wallace's theory. So even today, if you pick up works from the early 20th century and the late 19th century, it won't say Darwin's theory, it'll say Darwin and Wallace's theory. However, eventually he was whitewashed from history. And the reason is he did a U-turn that humans are basically not products of natural selection. And the reason for that is because Fuegians who lived in South America, who were basically savages, he noted that if you bring them to Cambridge, they could be just as intelligent as your Cambridge graduate. And that made no sense to him. So he actually said natural selection applies to every living being except human beings, right? That's a very interesting thing. And Dr. Michael Shermer, who's actually a well-known atheist, his PhD is actually on Alfred Russel Wallace. So that's a clear example of where a scientist does a complete U-turn because he sees that talent isn't genetic. Talent is based upon your work.
You're saying that the main thing that Wallace made Wallace do a U-turn was the fact that he noticed that human beings actually just could learn almost anything, and anyone from anywhere could adopt these, you know, amazing qualities through enough, you know, practice and enough implementation. It calls to mind my that film, I don't know if anyone's seen it, it was called The Missionaries, quite an old film, not black and white old, but quite old, where these Jesuit priests go to the during the time of the Spanish conquistadors, they go into the South American jungle somewhere. And in order to try and prove that, you know, the natives were actually human beings, right, and not just some, you know, creatures to be enslaved and manipulated, they teach them, you know, the violin, and they teach them basically to, you know, to sing and to play the violin and to do all of these, you know, supposedly higher arts and higher functions. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't save them. They still get massacred in the anyway. which just shows. But it's very interesting that, you know, the brother listening in with me to this conversation on this other group on Clubhouse was saying, this sounds really dangerous. These people who believe in, you know, nature and nurture, they sound like Nazis. He said it sounds really dangerous, right? We need to do something about it.
Well, interesting he said that, because the social Darwinists who basically believe this, they were the ones who eventually inspired Ernst Haeckel and inspired the Nazis. So there's a historical precedent for why he's worried, because, you know, even racists today, and the new, I think it's called the American Renaissance, is this new far right type of intellectual movement in America. And they try and push this idea that race is real and, genetic determinism, basically. So, yeah, I mean, these ideas have real life implications.
Yeah. So I think, look, bro, for our YouTube broadcast, I just want to finish with something, and then we'll log out of this and continue on Clubhouse. For anyone who wants to join the conversation, guys, sorry about that. You know, this was just an introduction with me and Sabor. Sabor Ahmed, by the way, he'll be joining us on Clubhouse as well. He's just not on there right now because of, because of the transmission and feedback and stuff like that. He's, you know, for those of you who don't know him, I would say he's our sort of Muslim expert on the field of evolution. He's done a degree in the philosophy of science. And, I really encourage you guys to look at, if you're interested in this, you know, is there a contradiction between evolution theory and what Islam teaches? If so, where and how do we reconcile it? Sabor Ahmed is the guy to go to and listen to what he has to say about it. He has some very, very, you know, interesting ideas, and generally orthodox as well. So, alhamdulillah, hopefully, I think he reconciles the two things in a really, really nice way and shows that it's not necessarily a contradiction. So please check that out. One final thing I want to finish with this guy is, in terms of geniuses are not born, they are made. Okay, and so the guy I want to mention is this guy called Laszlo Polgár. I was first introduced to this man when I read Matthew Said's book Bounce, which I highly recommend as a good, easy to read introduction to this whole topic about there's no such thing as talent, right? There's no such thing as talent or genius. It's something that is made. It's not intrinsic. It's not genetic. You're not just born popping out talented, you know, singing opera and coming up with theories of relativity, right? It's something that you learn, right, through hard work you know. And I used to say this to people as well, and they say, "Oh, you're Abdurrahim, you know, you're a good speaker. You're just talented." And I just think I was not born coming out of, you know, I wasn't born going in Alhamdulillah, Nahmaduhu, right? It didn't happen like that. I went down to speaker's corner for 10 years every Sunday, right? I, you know, was standing up there for hours, being heckled at by people, and you know. Like at the end of the day, Alhamdulillah, you know, I say the praises for Allah and thanks is for Allah that he, you know, facilitated that. But that's just not to deny the fact that a lot of hard, really, really hard, really hard work went into it. But anyway, I want to talk about Laszlo Polgár. This guy is extraordinary because he turned his life into a scientific experiment. He's Hungarian. He had studied intelligence and he was absolutely convinced that this is actually his, you know, I think it's a statement of his translated that, you know, genius is not born, it's made. And he was absolutely convinced. So he literally turned his life into an experiment. And so basically what he did is in order to prove this, this idea, he basically married someone who was purposefully married someone, a Russian lady, who was of, and he himself wasn't particularly like super high IQ. He married someone similarly who was of average IQ. They had two children, two girls. He really struggled with the Hungarian authorities to allow him to homeschool his kids. And basically all he did, he just basically turned them into chess masters. And he chose chess because he said it's scientific, it's mathematical, it's easy to measure, right? And basically he did all of this to prove that just two, you know, ordinary people through, you know, they could raise their kids with the right training, right, to be, you know, chess masters. And indeed that's what happened. His daughters went on to be some of the greatest female chess players that have lived. and I'm not going to go into detail about this guy. You can check it out on Wikipedia. It's got a really nice sort of summary of you know what he did and of his life. But I think, you know, this guy really showed that the idea that geniuses are born and not made, he proved it with his life and just showed that it's just, you know, really about the training, it's really about the practice, that purposeful practice, that disciplined, focused practice. And I think it's inspiring for all of us, for whoever you are, whatever you do, whether it's trying to, you know, get khushu' in your salah, memorize Quran, or become a sports genius, or study a language or languages or whatever, right? The key is really this hard work, this purposeful practice, this discipline, testing yourself. There is a particular method, there is a particular format that is the best way to do it. And it's also understanding about how the brain works. But really, this is what the conversation is. If anyone in their life has some stories, has some inspiration, some motivation through which we can motivate ourselves and others to put in that hard work, to develop ourselves and to develop others, that's really what we're hoping to do on Clubhouse today. And so for those of you who've joined me on YouTube, may Allah bless you. Jazakallah khair. I hope you benefited from that. And for those of us who are waiting on Clubhouse, thank you so much for waiting. We're going to be handing over to the moderators now to start the conversation. Let's see how it goes. Thank you so much, everybody. Until next time, assalamu alaikum. May God's peace and blessings be upon all of you. Anything else to finish with, Sabur?
That's it. Good luck.